if we were to take, say you take the five spirits, right, and you look at those, I would argue, I disagree with Chinese medicine in many ways, because obviously they would place the Shen as the highest aspect of spirit generally, or a lot of people would do. Some people would say all equally, but of course the Shen is often sort of spoken of in the highest regard. I think for men, the Zhe is the most important aspect of our being. The will is absolutely huge, and most men's will these days has been destroyed.
I'm Michael Max, and this is Cheological, the podcast that curates East Asian medicine and methods through the power of conversation. There's no way to avoid heartbreak, no way around the uncomfortable truth that all of us, regardless of the differences that we love to use to divide the world into its intersectional tribes, regardless of the creation story you hold about your world, your sexuality, cognitive capacity, sense of entitlement or victimhood, all of us are united in the experience of heartbreak. All of us have a dark star around which orbits our insecurities, pain, and promises. The gift we have is often found there with the wounds that both cripple us and open an avenue for our brilliance. The broken heart is a gateway. It can break open. It can break closed. I'm not sure of just how much choice we get in where or when our heart breaks. Perhaps we have influence in how it breaks. So often enough, because we are such mysteries to ourselves, our heart is also a mystery. The heart doesn't navigate by logic. It charts a course based on presence. It's the constant thrum that keeps us here in this moment, this moment, this moment. Chinese medicine considers the heart to be the imperial presence in our lives, the ruler that is the mandate of heaven. I'm wondering about the role of heart in dealing with trauma. Trauma-informed care is a big thing these days. I've not studied this in any depth, but I know from working with patients in clinic that there are people who have been through some pretty rough experiences, and it leaves them with a smaller world of possibility because their life orbits around what is missing. And there are others I've met who have had some terrible experiences, but it seems to have made them more resilient and downright anti-fragile. For sure, our world is an ongoing dance with uncertainty. For some, that's bad news. Others take it as a worthwhile challenge. I suspect it does often enough come back to the heart. And sticking for a moment with the metaphor of heart as emperor, mythologically speaking, there are good kings and bad kings. There are heads of state who are out for their own gain, and others that attend to the welfare of the realm. What do you do when your heart breaks? I suspect it lets you know what kind of sovereign you actually are. A patient of mine talking about politics said, "I'm not a person to have much to say about politics, but I'll say this. When you paddle a canoe, you go in the opposite direction that you're paddling on." I think this is probably the best explanation of how yin and yang turn into one another. It's obvious that males and females were different. This is observed in the behavior of animals, the differences in physical size, and behavior towards the young. Men and women are different, which is not to say there are not overlaps, or men with more yin, or women who express more yang. Whether you're a hardcore believer in biological sex or a person who feels like you're in the wrong body, I think we'd agree that there are differences between men and women. There was a time when the sex roles in the West were more rigid and prescribed, but for the past 50 to 60 years, we've seen significant cultural changes. Those changes have impacted women and men in different ways. I recently came across an Instagram post by Damo Mitchell in which he noted that it seems young men are increasingly struggling. They are rudderless and they're not thriving. This struck a chord for me because I've seen something similar. One of the things I enjoy about a conversation with Damo is his sense of humor, encyclopedic understanding of Chinese medicine physiology, willingness to have an opinion, and unusual amount of openness to consider that he might be wrong. So he seemed like a good person to sit down with and have a conversation about the trouble with men. We'll get into this in a moment. Stay with us. These conversations come to you through the generous support of our sponsors and members. All the sponsors here provide helpful products or services that you'll find beneficial in your clinical work. Worried that an EMR is too complex for you? Jane has friendly and knowledgeable support. Mayway Herbs is celebrating the 55th year of their family business. You're invited to make use of their vast library of resources. Are you concerned about the health of Mother Earth? AccuFast Needles is doing something about that. You can too. And later in the show, Ancestral Sturman offers up a sinew treatment, and the folks at Blue Poppy have something special to share as well. Do be sure to visit the sponsors page on the Geological website to take advantage of all the special offers our terrific sponsors have for listeners of the podcast.
Hi folks, I'm Yvonne Lau, president of Mayway Herbs. Our family business turns 55 this year, and we wouldn't have gotten this far without the love and support of our community. We're truly grateful and promise you that we'll continue to work hard to support you and your practice. Please visit Mayway.com to find the perfect Pumsar brand formula or formulate your own in our dispensary. Our site also has lots of articles, videos, and herbal recipes for you to explore. And tune into our podcast, Chinese Medicine Matters, for insightful discussions on all things TCM. Learn about treatment strategies and powerful herbal remedies. As we welcome the month of May, our focus is on women's health. Our newsletter articles and podcast episodes this month will highlight different aspects and unique challenges women face. So subscribe or tune in. And if you're a practitioner, get a discount on our women's health formulas this month. Just visit Mayway.com. This season and every season, trust Mayway Herbs for your health and wellness needs. And thank you for supporting Real Chinese Medicine.
I love how technology can help to automate my office, and I want to share with you my favorite tool for doing so, Jane. Jane is a clinic management software in EMR with a human touch. Whether you're switching your software or going paperless for the first time, the Jane team knows that the onboarding process can feel a little overwhelming. That's why with Jane, you don't just get software, you get a whole team. Included in every Jane subscription is their award-winning customer support available by phone, email, and chat whenever you need it, even Saturdays. You can also book a free account setup consultation to review your account and ensure you feel confident about going live. If you're interested in making the switch to Jane, head to jane.app/switch to book a one-on-one demo with a member of their support team. And be sure to mention the code CHEOLOGICAL at the time of sign up for a 1 month grace period on your new Jane account. I don't know about you, but sometimes I take a step back and marvel at my acupuncture needles. I mean, they're the world's simplest medical tool, a sharpened wire and a handle. That's it. And with this simple tool, hundreds of health conditions can be resolved. I love it. What I didn't love was the amount of packaging waste I generated at the end of the day. But that has now changed too. Ever since I switched to AccuFast Earth-Friendly Needles, I reduced my packaging waste by 90%. Not only are they a great needle, but the folks at AccuFast plant a tree for every 2 boxes of needles I use in the clinic. By switching to AccuFast Needles, you'll be helping patients, planting trees, and joining a community of practitioners changing the world. Like our simple needle, being a part of the solution, it's simple too. Visit AccuFastNeedles.com/geological to learn how. Damo Mitchell, welcome back to Geological.
Hello, sir. Nice to be back.
Delighted to have you. Looking forward to chewing the fat with you. We've got a really juicy topic today. We're going to talk about the trouble with men.
There's plenty of that, so I'm sure we can get into it for sure. So what's the trouble with men?
Well, I was going to ask you. I saw a an Instagram post of yours.
Sure.
I love your Instagram post. There's often pictures of Bali and exotic places, and you know, it kind of feeds into my travel lust. So I kind of get a little hit of other places by following you. And you had said something on one of your posts about, and it was curious to you, that it seems like a lot of, as you use the phrase, lost young men seem to be attracted to what you're teaching, and they're like showing up in your work, in your life. Lost young men, that's a potent thing to say. So I just want to jump in and start with that.
Sure. Well, I think their first error is I don't think they realize I'm a lost middle-aged man. I think they assume that I'm on more of a set path than they are themselves. But so that I think often the draw, well, I guess, like, you know, often I'm teaching Qigong or martial arts, essentially. And it used to be that people would come for technical skill or their health, you know, to improve their breathing or relax or something. But things come in phases when you teach. And I guess the latest phase seems to be a high proportion of men in their 20s to mid-30s, maybe 20 to mid-30, that kind of age range, who are really after something else. I think they either start out with this aim coming to the school to study with us, or it very quickly becomes apparent to them that's the kind of underlying thing they're looking for, is really how to be a male, as far as I can make out. That's as sort of simply as I can put it. So I've sort of been confronted with this large group of, I don't want to make it, it's going to sound derogatory if I'm not careful, actually. And they're very lovely people, super pleased to have them there. But there's a lot of males that are struggling mentally, physically, not comfortable in themselves, various health and psychological issues, and just kind of lost in society, you know. And that's something that I wasn't really used to. That's been a kind of new thing in the last few years. So I'm just kind of learning to tackle this issue and trying to understand why it is that so many young men seem to feel so lost at the moment. So that's what I'm pointing at with that a little bit.
Yes. Well, you just said something here, which is, I think, a very poignant question mm-hmm. for any man at any stage. As you grow into being a man, the question is, how do you be a man?
Sure. Yeah.
And you know, look, different times are going to have different answers to that. But my suspicion is that there is something, I want to say fundamental, there might be something fundamental. And I think about this from the Chinese medicine philosophy point of view. Men have more yang, women have more yin, men have more qi, women have more blood, right? I mean, there's some very basic tenets that we have. You can see the qi of young boys for sure, because like out on the playground, they are all over the place. They're rambunctious, you know, and girls tend not to be rambunctious. I mean, generally speaking. So there are some fundamentals, I suspect.
Yeah, I mean, the argument really comes down to, isn't it, that idea of nature versus nurture, I guess, which is, most people sit somewhere on that spectrum of believing one or the other is more important. And I would say that the majority of the people that I'm encountering have almost been brought up to think that nurture is almost 99% of the reason why you have certain gender qualities or characteristics as a person. So the amount of times in the early stages getting to know a student that they will talk about, we discuss these things a lot, because when I teach, I also go and I'm happy to go to a restaurant with people or sit around in the house and chat about their life and get to know who they are, as well as what we're teaching. It's a very sociable thing. And almost always that sort of idea comes up that they have been, or society has nurtured men into being something very different from women, and that is wrong. And actually, we're all just the same. And that is an idea that I absolutely refute, because I'm of the opinion that we are 90% nature with regards to those core values of what separates men or women from one another. And I find the idea that there isn't a key underlying quality to what makes a male flourish, should I say. I find the idea that that's not preset within us kind of ludicrous, kind of mad. And And I don't really see many people who fall into that category of thinking everything is nurture. They don't seem to be doing very well, you know, and often that idea is what I have to explore with people, explore with the males particularly, to get them to understand that actually there are some inherent qualities within us that need dealing with. And also, as you say, differences with regards to qi blood, yin and yang within the body, for short, jing, hugely. I mean, you have to go right back to the core essence and the way that jing is manipulated and moved within the body, and even the way men and women process the emotions, according to Chinese medicine, should be made clearer that they're very different. We don't process emotions the same as each other, the two genders. So this is two sexes, I should say. That becomes more complicated. So I think these are the ideas I end up exploring with people quite early on.
This is great. This is really potent. And I'm looking forward to digging deeper into this thing about inherent qualities. Men and women processing emotions differently. Okay, that's provocative. I'm sticking a pin in it just for the moment. Yeah, I think it is.
Sure. Okay.
Because I also grew up in a time, look, I'm a little older than you, but I grew up in a time.
You're a man in your 20s, Michael, I can see it.
Yeah, thank God, no.
God in that chi, it's good.
Thank God, no. No, in my 20s, I was very confused. In my 20s, you know, like women's liberation was just like really beginning to happen. I was very confused as a young man because there's like all the male role models from like the 50s that you get into the late 60s and 70s. It's like, don't try that. That's probably not going to go well for you.
Sure.
Do I hold a door open for a woman or not?
Absolutely, you should.
But back then, it could get you in trouble because, like, I can open my own door. Thank you very much, asshole.
Sure.
Well, I'm just trying to be nice. I bring it up because as I was growing up, there was confusion. I think at this moment of time, the confusion is even more so. Because look, and this may be provocative, but here we go. When I grew up, there was no question that men were men and women were women. Now there's a question of, am I a man? Or am I somewhere in between man and woman?
Sure.
I mean, you're talking about perhaps we're 90% nature and 10% nurture. And I think that's a really important thing to think about. And beyond that, if you're sitting in a place of, I don't even know what I am because biological sex isn't real, demo. I think it's very confusing for people going through puberty or entering into that early adulthood. Who am I? How am I? How do I be with others? I think there's a lot more confusion now than there used to be. It's just my suspicion as an old guy with white hair. Looking at the situation. But I really worry about young men as well for this very reason that some things that are very, I'm going to call it nature, is now being refuted as not nature.
It would be strange for a Chinese medical practitioner or adherent to Chinese medical philosophy to not agree with nature, because I would argue that the majority of the Chinese medical literature states things like women operate, well, right from the first chapter of the Suwen, you know, women operate according to a 7-year cycle and an 8-year cycle. For males, that's clearly not nurture. Women are primarily governed by their blood, and obviously the connection between Tiangui and menstruation is obviously far more relevant to women. And then they state that men operate according to qi, and that there's many of these kind of generalizations and statements with Chinese medicine about the constitutional nature of a human being that would suggest that at our core, at least on a physical and an energetic level, that we are created, if you want, to certain sort of set standards, you know. I mean, but if I can just riff off a couple of things you were saying there, it's a little beside the point for Chinese medicine, but that idea of opening the door, for example, for women, chivalry, is something that I always find a strange concept, because I believe it's become misunderstood, because I think that often that people not always women. I think it's probably safe to say people would think that the idea of opening a door for a woman, or I'm still very old fashioned. If I'm sat at a table and a woman comes in to join the group, I would always stand until the woman sits down. I have very old fashioned values. If I'm pouring a drink, I'll always for a table, I always make sure I pour for the women first and mine last. And that's just how I live. But it's not to disempower women. It's the opposite. It's because men naturally have more strength and more dominant qualities than women. That's just the fact. I mean, the physical strength cannot be denied between the two sexes. So chivalry and those kind of ideas aren't to disempower the woman. They are to remind the male to put the physically less dominant, being very careful with my words here, the physically less dominant group of people first. So if I hold the door for the woman, then I'm, or a bunch of women as they walk through, and if I make sure that my man has placed that person first, it reminds me to quell or keep my natural yang or dominance under, so that we're more likely to have a level of equality as we're communicating with one another. And I find people that don't have those old fashioned manners, males that don't have that old fashioned manner, tend to be more dominant. They're the ones that tend to talk over the women and mansplain and don't listen to them. And there's a reason for it, because they're not reminding themselves through their habitual actions that they're supposed to be the caring person that they are, and allow the fairer sex to, you know, be an equal to them, if that makes sense.
It does make sense.
I advocate these values very highly. Mm. And I think as well, women are very, very smart and intuitive. I think intuition in women is a lot higher than males. Their somatic empathy between it is far higher. Men, we're like bricks compared to women with regards to the ability to empathize sort of for what someone else is feeling. So my experience actually is when I have held doors for women or pulled out chairs or all of, not before they sit down, that would be cruel, you know what I mean? But when I have that kind of manners, I never get women that have a problem with it. Women never complain. They're never creeped out or anything like that. And I think because intuitively women can know, they just intuitively know that it's not coming from a place of creepiness and it's not coming from a negative place. So I think if women have issues with those kind of manners, it's probably more likely that they can tell that the intention is not pure from the male, to be perfectly honest.
Yes. So if you're using your, I'm going to use air quote, manners as manipulation of them.
Yes.
That's going to send off a red flag, and it should. If you're using your mm-hmm. manners to manipulate you, recognizing some very basic physical traits, not all men, I mean, I'm a small guy, you know, but you're a pretty big guy. And no. Yes, people that are larger physically easily can impose a danger. And let's face it. Men, you know, the upper body strength in men is ridiculous compared to women.
Yeah, doesn't even compare. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I think even aside from Chinese medicine, those kind of concepts are very important. And that kind of also goes, I will bring it round to a Chinese medicine model afterwards, if that's okay. But it's probably easier for me to explain my ideas from a non-Chinese medicine perspective first, if that's okay. I think with regards to emotions, I think that with all of us, both sexes, there is a scale, isn't there? There's like your emotional overload you can take, or your emotional threshold, and then there's something else. There's another quality that's different for men and women. It's like a set of scales. And depending on how that set of scales tips, that's really when you become overloaded and you get lost in these emotional states. And if I were to generalize, which you have to, if you're talking about sexes, and then accept that, of course, some people will live outside of that generalization, of course. But for the majority of men and women, women's emotional state is often balanced with their ability to feel safe, in my experience. So if their concept of safety is very high, which doesn't just mean with males, it can mean within their life financially and general happiness, all these kind of things as well. You know, if they feel content and safe within their life, women's emotional threshold will be a lot higher, meaning that they can load their system with more emotions and it doesn't overload them and they don't start to suffer psychological issues. And this is often reflected in the strength of their blood. I mean, that's the kind of the psychological thing that starts to impact upon a woman's blood health, aside from all the other things like diet and what have you. And I think with males, it's different. The level of your emotions is not related to your safety. It's related to your idea of competence as much as anything. And if you are a competent male that feels that they can handle life and essentially be a rock for the people around them, meaning you have a degree of personal strength within yourself, then you're able to load a lot more emotions into your system without it sort of boiling over. And that's where the problem arises. And this is often manifested within our chi more than anything else. So women's emotions quite often, in my opinion, tend to go to the solar plexus area, which is why women very much will kind of hold, or that sort of discomfort, you know, the sort of abdominal discomfort you often see, the earth kind of symptoms. You'll see a lot more in women with regards to their mannerisms and where they touch their body when they're in a sort of emotional discomfort. And then it will affect the uterus and the blood. Whereas males will often load into the nervous system and the spine and the dew channel, and then they'll start to get those kidney signs and symptoms. And then this will go into the head, so the migraines. And as it passes up, it will stress the liver. And this is how the emotional overload onto males take place. So I think that very simply, and probably so simply, they would offend people, because simple models can be offensive, because they almost sound a little, what do you say, patronizing maybe, but I don't mean it in that way, that I think a woman has to learn how to be content and safe within this world, and a male has to learn how to shoulder responsibility and to feel competent and capable, and that will enable them to function emotionally. And this is where I think both genders are falling down, actually, but males are definitely suffering with this quite a lot, because they don't feel competent. They don't know what that means. And they're almost frightened of their own strength, because they've got the idea of strength and dominance mixed up, which is a dangerous confusion to make, as far as I can see. So I don't know. I don't know what you think of that. Please pull my theories apart, Michael.
Yes. Well, okay. I appreciate, first of all, that you take it back to qi and blood. Look, we're Chinese medicine people. If we can't ground this conversation in the fundamentals of our medicine, then we're wasting our time. The piece about that you explained about how men and women process emotion differently, that seems like a useful model. That makes sense to me. I listen to you say it, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to watch a little more carefully in clinic. How do women hold themselves? Right? Like you were saying, like, where do they touch themselves? Where do they hold? Where are their symptoms? Men, you know, being different, goes into their nervous system, goes into their kidneys. And, you know, when I imagine men being dysregulated, they're kind of like wobbly and all over the place.
Sure.
You know, you can just look at them.
Yes.
You can tell. So there's that. Here's the other piece. I think it's really important for men, and you just said this when you were talking about competence. Men need to feel like they're useful.
Absolutely, yes.
If we don't feel like we're useful, first of all, we don't flourish. But you look at men, it's been common knowledge for decades. Men who work and work and work, and then they retire, and then they're dead after a few years. And we've had the finger pointed as, well, you need to do, you know, you need to be able to think of yourself as beyond the provider, right? You need to have more to your life. Well, okay, maybe, but this is something really core to us. And without that sense of usefulness, without that sense of purpose, we wither. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about young men right now. So if they never had it in the first place, that's a whole different set of problems.
Yes.
Now there was some, yeah. And we'll get to that in a second. Here's the other thing that I think is very important. You made a distinction here between strength and what was the other one?
Dominance or cruelty.
Dominance.
Or,
you know, yeah. Dominance. Yeah. Strength and dominance. Strength does not mean dominance.
Mm-hmm. Shouldn't do. No.
Shouldn't. In fact, if you're using your strength properly, you're not being dominant. But you're pulling it out when you need it, because let's face it, men are often relied upon for protection.
Well, as you can see, when any military conflict breaks out, but even on a more domestic level as well, I assume most people would think bad of me if I was in a threatening situation and I used whatever woman I was with as the human shield while I escaped. So there's certain expectations upon me, yes, for those kind of things. And I think there are for all males. And I think that that's something that most males have found strange when I've spoken to them. And sometimes I've spoken to men and they've actually refuted this. And then they've gone away and thought about it. And sometimes they've come back to me and said, actually, yeah, I can find this in myself. Is I think that many males, especially in their early, quite a lot of years, you know, maybe even goes back to that sort of 32 years old is the peak of male strength. It might even be around there, that males live in a state of fear of other males. Like the concept of fear of violence from other males is huge on the male psychology. And it goes right back to, you know, when you're a kid and obviously when your children have a lot of variation in sizes, don't they? Growth spurts at different times and things like that. And sometimes you see two kids and they don't even look like the same species, the difference in the size of them. And often it's the smaller kids, the ones that aren't so big and aren't so growing so fast, that become the nervous and more anxious ones because they're living in a state of fear. And I think that if we were to take, say you take the five spirits, right, and you look at those, I would argue, I disagree with Chinese medicine in many ways, because obviously they would place the Shen as the highest aspect of spirit generally, or a lot of people would do. Some people would say all equally, but of course the Shen is often sort of spoken of in the highest regard. I think for men, the Zhe is the most important aspect of our being. The will is absolutely huge. And most men's will these days has been destroyed, largely by pornography, to be perfectly honest, and damaging the substance that's connected to it, if we're totally honest. But that spirit of the juror is very important. And I think the Shen is more important for women, to be perfectly honest. So if you look at the difference between, certainly during formative years, I think probably as you get older and your testosterone drops a little bit, you know, and you move into, dare we say, wiser years, if that's true. I think women function very well if they're happy. You know, like, I think that's very good for women, you know, and it's very important to me that the women in my life, not just my partner, but also family and female friends and people around me are happy and content. And they're enjoying life. Men don't do very well if they seek the emotion of joy, I don't believe. Men do better when they seek the ability to have something to strive for so that their jaw builds nice and strong. And then that also enables them to feed that sort of liver energy, which is obviously huge in males, into a very directed growth pattern that enables them to drive forward. Because of course, what happens if males don't? Well, if they have no will, then of course they feel kind of useless. They vegetate and play video games and can't see any function in life, really. And with regards to the Hun, if it's not directed into something, then it becomes constrained, and then you get constrainment disorder. And that obviously leads to a kind of frustrated depression that a lot of men get stuck within. And this then forms this weird cycle, because then what I get, and again, I, you know, it's very hard because obviously anybody that I teach who's male will be listening to this and know I'm talking about them. And I don't mean it as an insult or not. We all have our own imbalances. So apologies to anybody who's hearing this. I hope you don't take it as an insult because it's not meant that way. But I think a lot of men that I'm meeting, younger men, have a lack of kidney strength due to the jaw being depleted. And then they have a constrainment disorder. The liver qi is stagnant. And then the result of this is as soon as they start building strength or they start building qi or they start building competence, any of those things, the first thing it does is it sets off that liver energy. So it creates a kind of frustration and a kind of anger. And what I have to explain to them is, look, if we're going to build up your strength and your competence, whether it's energetically or through qi or whether it's physically through an art, you're going to go through this phase where it's going to wind you up. And you're going to get annoyed and you're going to get frustrated because all of that strength you're building is hitting your imbalance. It's like the pathogen is increasing, but we have to go through that threshold and then you will find out that actually you can build power. You can develop a surplus of qi and an essence within your body, and it will produce a strength that enables you to not be frustrated. And then when that strength is high, you have a higher degree of emotional competence, from meaning that you can remain centered despite whatever stresses go on around you. And that threshold is major for males to try to break through. But often, to be honest, sorry, I'm talking too much here, the jaw is damaged. So the kind of the root of what we're trying to do psychologically is already very, very difficult. And that is pornography. like, in my opinion, that is the main reason that younger men are suffering with those things.
Again, I appreciate your Chinese medicine way of taking a look at this dynamic. It's powerful. It's accessible. It's something that makes sense to me. So let's dig into this juror.
Sure.
A little bit more. And I suspect we're going to get into Jing as well. I'm always interested in talking about Jing because Jing is one of these weird kind of like essence. Okay. It's one of these really interesting concepts that in my experience, I don't feel like I understand really well. I mean, I hear about it. You know, it's important. Everybody in the profession talks about it. We all nod our heads like, oh yeah, Jing, important. Like, what the fuck is it? I mean, some of these things are really slippery. And especially as Well, I mean, there's that aspect, right? There's that sexual essence piece. And some people would call it genetics. Again, sometimes there are terms that we have that come from a different time and place than us Westerners grew up in. And so I think we need to be a little bit careful or maybe explain more deeply what these things mean. So I want to talk about Jing here in just a second as it relates to juror. Here's something else I want to ask about first. Because it kind of fits in here. You're talking about men having this kind of kidney depletion. And the emotion of the water is fear. And it seems to me we are living in a time, it's never been safer to be a human being living in society. I mean, compared to 100 years ago, like it's so much better.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, there's problems. I'm not saying there's not problems. The role of safety, I'm curious about that. What's the problem with too much safety? Because, again, I think we're living in a society right now that is absolutely obsessed with safety. Now, you were talking about women need to feel safe. So that's a piece of it, and I get that. But I'm talking about men here in particular. Because I know as a man for myself, like, I want to be safe, but not too safe. There's something about having an edge to work myself against.
I don't think men should be safe at all, actually.
Okay. So I want to hear more about why men shouldn't be safe. I want to hear more about this connection between pornography, the destruction of juror and Jing.
Okay. I don't think men should be safe first. I think men should be brave, which is not the same. So I think that a great strength in males is to have not an unhealthy level, but a correct level of self-destructiveness, like courageousness. I think
courageousness,
and not in a negative way. I'm not talking, you know, dangerous levels of self-harm or something, but I think the ability to be courageous and face risk is more important than anything else, because everybody's going to suffer fear, but what you do with it is what makes a difference. And I believe with regards to something like Jing, for example, or related to the emotion of fear, before we even define Jing, I think that it's like anything. It has to. If you push the boundaries of something, you stretch its threshold. You know what I mean? So if I go to the edge of what my kidneys can take, if you like, with regards to the experience of feeling unsafe or discomfort, is probably a better way to look at it, and then coming to terms with it and meeting that threshold, then it's going to grow. Whereas if I'm constantly safer, 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 then that boundary is going to go smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller until even the term I learned from you, I think, actually, in the past, microaggressions, because all of a sudden feel like a major act of violence or something like this, which for a male is definitely not a healthy position to be put in. So I advocate males actually to take risks. Sensible risks. I think it's very good for them, especially when they're younger. For me, that was through martial arts and fighting in a controlled fashion, you know, so that I was at risk, but I was never going to get killed or anything. But that overcoming that fear and that adrenaline dump that came from that kind of thing pushed my kidney threshold quite high until my willpower is actually very, very strong. My juror has been sort of fashioned by that. And I don't think everybody needs to do that kind of thing, but there needs to be something. You have to have taken some kind of risks at some point as a male. Some people do it financially, don't they? That's their way in business or whatever, but I don't know enough about money to do such things, you know, because everyone has to have something they do. A man that doesn't take risks will deplete their kidneys for sure, in my opinion. And what was the other thing you asked about? Pornography. Did you ask about pornography?
Yes, and jur and jing.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, one aspect of essence of jing is that it moves essentially into action during sexual arousal, not just orgasm, but during sexual arousal as well. And then ejaculation is a sort of extra depletion on top of that. But even sexual arousal does. And, you know, if we wanted pornography when I was younger, you'd have to find the brave one that would shoplift it from the top shelf in the newsagent because you were too embarrassed to actually take it to the counter. And you very rarely saw such things. So pornography wasn't really a major part of my life when I was growing up. Not really. The Sears catalog would hardly be considered a high level of erotica these days, I would imagine. But these days, of course, most young people, I think it's from age 10 or 11 from the stats, are accessing huge amounts of pornography from their mobile all the time. And when I'm talking with young males, I'm surprised at how addicted they are to pornography and sex, or even if they're not now, in the past, how much they have been, I think they usually are still. And the level of damage that they've done to that essence during a formative years is massive, is huge. So one thing I always tell people that I'm teaching is like, you're a cultivator, right? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, well, cultivators don't use porn. Like, if you're using pornography, then you may as well just stop immediately. Because as a male, that's one of your biggest damaging influences. And then, of course, addiction is huge, because the nature of addiction is that it causes habits that erode will. That's what an addiction is. If your willpower is able to overcome the habit, it's no longer an addiction. So to be addicted to something like porn is doubly damaging, like most young males are, because they have the erosion of their will through addictive habits, plus the sexual stimulation as well, which is damaging the kidneys. So I'm so surprised. I was surprised when I started seeing young males with weak kidneys, because, of course, as I'm sure you remember when you studied Chinese medicine right from the beginning, you're usually told kidney depletion will be in people in older years or the elderly, and you shouldn't expect it in young people. But now the vast majority of young males that come in are kidney deficient. Not the women, but the males are for sure. And I put it down to that primarily. Excess safety. I mean, the world's become so safe that men believe they're taking a risk if they do an ice bath. I mean, that's the highest challenge most people have done these days, isn't it? Which is kind of pathetic.
Everyone, Anne Cecil Sturman here. A working knowledge of the 8 extraordinary channels from the unbroken oral tradition of acupuncture is valuable beyond words. The power of these channels is tremendous if the practitioner has well integrated diagnostic, theoretical, and practical skill. You'll be familiar with Dumai, the governor channel, or the Sea of Yang, the primal reservoir of Yang, which ultimately finances all movement and growth. But this channel also governs the ability to self-determine. The psycho-emotional presentation of your patients can be matched to a classical activation of this channel, clearing impedance in the free flow of Yang Qi to body, mind, and spirit. I'd like to share with you the marvelous potency of the Du channel in a full-length live treatment video from the seminar I taught last year in Melbourne, Australia. It's at annececilsturman.com/sinews2024. Click on the Jump to Free Teaching button or see the link on my Instagram page at annececilsturman. Thanks, Michael. Back to you.
Well, it's kind of a thing these days as well, the ice plunge. It's a thing. It's like a health cultivation practice.
I think it's also the closest place a lot of people have come to bravery, because they have to overcome some discomfort because their nipples are cold. So I think it's about that too. So.
Talk to me a little more about Jing, you know, beyond like sexual fluids, right? I mean, I know we have that idea, but Jing essence, again, this is one of those terms that we have in Chinese medicine. I've been at this for a while. I don't really feel like I understand it that well. I feel like I should understand it a hell of a lot better than I do. But again, it's a term from another time, another culture, another language. You've had the good fortune to dive into some different traditions and get a deeper look at some of this stuff. I'm curious to know what you found on some of those deep dives. Talk to me a bit about Jing. Help me understand it.
Sure. I think it's easiest to understand Jing from an alchemy perspective, actually. Neidan, which obviously Chinese alchemy and Chinese medicine have a lot of overlaps. And you can see many of the correspondences in Chinese medicine, the correlations between organs and tissues. For example, kidneys and marrow and brain, for example, is very much from an alchemical perspective, as far as I can see. So I think that correspondence is huge. The Du channel to me and Jing have a very close correspondence as well. So the mechanism really for Jing really is, it's different for men and women, actually. It's very, very different for men and women. The women's Jing doesn't even sit in the same place. Women have Jing a lot more in the chest. The males have it largely down in the kidneys and around the perineum. And I think the reason that that's not more widely known is because the inner feminist in me is annoyed here. There's that most Chinese medicine writings are from a male perspective, so they're usually talking about a male body, aren't they, more than anything else, because all old books are written from a male perspective, aren't they? That's normally how they were written. So sorry, women, apologies for that, but, you know, I didn't write it. So the Jing correspondences really are that essentially the energy from the kidneys, which is how to make this simple. Okay, so there's a form of energy around the kidneys.
See, it's not simple.
No, it's not. I'm just trying not to turn it into, like when I give a lecture on Jing on the Chinese medicine course, it's about 4 hours long. So I'm trying not to steal your day, actually. So essentially you have the Ming fire, the Ming Huo, right? That people will talk about, which is a form of essentially electrical energy that's in your lower back. That's the basis of it. And what this does is stimulate the adrenals and the kidneys into action, which causes a form of substance to move down towards the perineum that then moves into the tailbone through Wei Lu to create the marrow of the spine. So essentially the correspondence goes kidneys, marrow of spine, up through the back into the brain. And then that marrow is generated by the Jing. The result of this is if your Jing is nice and strong, what it will do is it will cause the glands in your brain to produce a lot of hormones that rain down through your body, which is why you get those cycles drawn in alchemy, to make sure that you are hormonally strong. And that's essentially what your essence is. So if you have very good Jing, you will have very good hormones, very good growth hormones, correct balance of testosterone and estrogen, all those kind of things, all the things that are too scientifically complicated for me to understand. And the result of this is that your body will function well, your cells will function at a high level, meaning they produce a lot of energy and they carry out their roles as they're supposed to do. But when you get to the base of the body, around the perineum and the genitalia, there is a region very much affected by REN4. That acupuncture point really accesses that field where the perineum sits, where the Jing kind of gathers. Now, if there is an emotional, an arousal, a sexual arousal or any kind of base desire, really, that field mobilizes. And the result is that some of that essence doesn't go into the marrow and up through to the brain. Instead, it starts to generate sexual fluids and higher degrees of sexual arousal. So this kind of goes into why Chinese medicine then says, if you have excess sexual activity, it will deplete your Jing. Because you're breaking the cycle, meaning that the marrow is not going to be nourished and the brain is not going to produce enough hormones. So essentially, excess sexual activity will deplete the hormonal system in your body, which will then cause the cells not to function so well, meaning the overall vitality of the body starts to drop, and then you become kidney essence or kidney deficient, I should say. I should be careful with my wording. So that's my view on it. So then if you have something that causes a lot of fear that puts you into fight or flight, of course, that's your adrenals and the nerves in your spine and your nervous system. So all of a sudden now you are straining or stressing or if you want, causing stagnation in that pathway that should be initiating more production of hormones. So the result is you will age faster and you won't be as healthy, and generally your whole body and your whole organ system won't function quite so well, basically. So that's my view of what Jing is. That's why you get, if it starts to go, what you get? Well, it's your spine, isn't it? Lower back starts to hurt. Kidney adrenals start to go, which will cause the tinnitus. And then because your upper body is not supporting the weight of your rib cage, your knees will take it. So then you'll get knee ache and stuff like that. It's all just a byproduct of that mechanism being messed up. And the connection between that and the willpower is obviously another jump. But I believe also that your willpower comes from the uprightness and strength of the do channel and the ability for it to nourish your brain to create sensible thinking. And if that sensible thinking is not nourished, then the result is your emotional thinking takes over. And I think high levels of emotional thinking and low levels of willpower kind of go hand to hand. They go hand in hand quite often. So I don't know, bit of a mouthful there, but that's my view on it.
I appreciate that you've taken 4 hours of lecture and condensed it into 12 minutes.
Yeah,
so tried. If I'm following this, then bravery and courage can be a kind of kidney tonic.
Yes. Yeah, if you want to build something, it's like building a muscle. If you want to build a muscle, you have to stress it. You go to the gym and you lift the weight, and because it's stressed, it goes, oh, I don't like this, so it gets bigger. And it's only the same with your mental qualities. The problem is that I think people have been kept so safe when they were younger that when they go out into the big bad world and they actually encounter a stress, and that stress might be, oh, I don't know, you run out of money or you lose a job or someone dumps you or something like that, or maybe you can't even get a partner, whatever, some kind of stress in life. You haven't pushed those thresholds, so all of a sudden it cripples you. That emotional burden is too high. So then you start to get negative psychological consequences, and this is what men are suffering from, big time.
I'm just letting this sink in for a moment. There's a lot here, Damo.
Yeah, sorry, I speak too fast. I don't talk. I dump everything out. Sorry.
Well, look, this is why I enjoy the podcast and why I think people enjoy listening to it.
Yeah,
because we're just having a conversation. We don't know where it's going to go. We don't know what's going to arise. There's something unsafe about an unscripted media event, right?
So here's one for you. What do you think? I don't think the do channel works in women very well.
Ooh, wow.
And I don't think the ren channel works in men very well. I think it does a little bit, but not hugely strong. Now, if I treat women and I use the ren channel, you get massive effects. It's incredible. Like, I think it's partly why fertility and gynecological treatments for women are hugely effective, as we all know, a very powerful part of Chinese medicine, because the Ren channel in women is amazing. But if you work the Du channel, don't get quite so strong effects, you know. And I think this really goes into the difference between men and women on that level, because men very much, their Jing goes through that marrow and up into the spine, whereas for women, I think the Tian Gui, of course, that goes into the uterus to produce some menstrual blood. Also, some of that essence is extracted by the Ren channel up towards the chest, where it sits ready to produce breast milk, of course, meaning that, which is why the Ren channel goes up in Chinese medicine, not down. Yeah, the numbers go up. And most Qigong people are confused because they're like, well, it should cycle around. It should go up the Du and down the Ren. But of course, what they're indicating is the Ren channel is moving up because that essence is extracted towards the chest. So the result is, with the difference between the two, apart from differences in treatment, is that men, if they overload the, like, emotional stuff and the connection with the kidneys is going to deplete the essence very, very strongly. Like stress and kidney burnout's going to do that. For women, because of the connection between your heart-based emotions and the Zhongwan point that's obviously related to caring, if there's issues around that, that's what depletes the essence in women more than anything else. So higher, that is the kind of root of when they become kidney deficient, from what I've seen.
It's interesting. Again, something to take into clinic and investigate. Earlier in this conversation, we were talking about, look, there are some fundamental physical differences between men and women. Nature has made us different.
For sure.
I think we ignore that at our peril. just an opinion. And so it doesn't mean that one's better than the other, but like which side of the coin is better, the head or the tail? Well, you need them both, right? Or you don't have a coin.
Sure.
So with human beings, we have these differences that together help create a unity. We each have a bit of the other. It's the way it works. To ignore the differences, especially in a medical situation, which is when people are coming to us, you know, you can't treat men and women the same. And this is one of the, and you pointed this out, this is one of the very real and appropriate criticisms of medicine over many years is that, look, many tests were done on men, not on women, right? The Chinese medicine books written about men, not women. Those differences are there. And I really appreciate, in particular, the way that you're able to speak to these, both from the Chinese medicine and, as you were just discussing, the alchemical point of view. Thinking of using the Ren more for women, do more for men. I'm like, huh, okay, I hear it. And immediately it strikes a feeling of, oh, that makes sense. How come I didn't see that earlier? That's pretty obvious. How come I didn't notice that earlier? Well, I haven't noticed it, but I'm going to go investigate it.
Yeah. I mean, the names of the channels tell you, because it's the governing channel, which is very much the idea of governance, and the generative, which is the archetypal yang symbol within sort of I Ching theory. And the conception or the receptive ideas go very much together with the symbol for kun, like the ultimate female perspective. So it means that the Ren channel is largely the uterus channel, really, is primarily what it is. And the Du channel largely is the marrow channel. I don't want to say the brain channel. You know, that will cause all kinds of issues between gender arguments, of course, but it's the marrow channel.
The marrow channel.
Mm. Yeah, with obviously the sea of marrow being in the brain. So nothing to do with intelligence, but more to do with the production of the hormones that tend to get more depleted in males, to be perfectly honest, than they do in women's.
In recent years, the Siam acupuncture style has generated significant interest and a loyal and growing following. In the Siam approach, a precise diagnosis leads to a four-needle treatment to address the five element and six qi imbalances in the body. The four needles target the controlling and generating cycles. It's common using this method for the needle sensation to be stronger than in many other styles. Thus, the choice of needle becomes important. The Unico brand of needles lends itself to both strong and gentle techniques. These superior needles are made of uncoated Japanese surgical stainless steel and feature the best guide tube on the market with its unique beveled edge. Additionally, Unico needles have a tensile property that helps with freehanding needles into Jingwell points and allows you to more easily feel the arrival of qi. Blue Poppy is the exclusive importer and distributor of Unico needles. Use the code QI2024 to save 10% off Unico needles at www.bluepoppy.com. You'll be glad you did. When you treat the Du channel, especially in young men that have the kinds of issues that we've been discussing, what do those treatments look like? Are you doing like eight extras, master couple? Are you treating directly on the Du? What, could you give me a sense of what you're doing there? How do you do the Du?
How do you do the Du? Well, if there was a video with this podcast, there'd be a dance that goes with that, I think, from the sounds of it. I think that my treatments these days have changed a little bit because the form of medicine that I'm involved in is a sort of mix between herbs. Herbs are kind of tertiary, really, and then I'd say needles would be secondary, and then qi emission would be the first aspect of it, like the most important one. So it's a little different with regards to the how we work with it. So there are certain points on the body that cause the qi fields to move in to consolidate around certain channels. So if you have a nourishing point, for example, an easy one. Well, Du4. Say you take Du4, a nice and easy one. This is a point that is very easy to either contract or expand. And if I contract a little bit, it causes a little bit of pressure and warms up which is why they call it the fire, you know, because it gets very hot on the back if you can stimulate it. And if I release it a little bit, which is a reduction technique, then it'll release some of that heat, meaning the pressure is let go. So a lot of the way I work with regards to the dew channel, for example, is to manipulate the points along the region of the dew to either compress or expand to tonify or reduce the flow of qi along the length of the spine, essentially. And what I'm looking for when I'm working with someone is if the dew channel starts to open up, then their body will physically stretch, like against their will. They will lay on the bed and lengthen, basically. Sometimes done with needles, if I need to get very, very specific, or sometimes with qi emission. But the overall aim, really, is to kind of stimulate and load up the dew channel with a little bit more qi, yang qi specifically, a kind of electrical energy, in order to get it to stimulate more growth within the body. And then, of course, the other side of it is you also have to release all of the stagnation around things like the liver and what have you, so that as the body becomes more yang, it doesn't sort of turn into excess heat or create more stagnation in the body. So, I mean, that's the kind of the foundation of how I work with it more than anything else. But it can overload for some people. You really have to open them up and get that stagnation out the way, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Stagnation can be a big problem.
Yeah.
And I appreciate the way you explained it earlier. There's weak kidney essence. Mm. Kidneys are weak. Liver is kind of under control, mostly because it's not really being fed by the kidney. Now, you start boosting up that kidney, if the liver is constrained, you see all kinds of bad behavior.
Yep, it's gonna make it worse for sure. And then I think alongside Chinese medicine with the regards to the technical side of it, we should obviously as practitioners never discount the importance of actually sitting and talking with people, because these concepts that I'm chatting with you here, maybe to some people listening might sound a bit blunt or archaic or like I'm a bit of a caveman or something with regards to my views of males.
Well, you did say we are bricks.
We are bricks, yeah, completely. Certainly that's true about myself. But if I had more time with someone, and obviously I'm working therapeutically, then I will explain these concepts. And generally, if you explore it, you can get people to say the sense in it. So I think aside from the treatment, males specifically have to start to understand that the way that they are living their life is the root cause of many of their issues. So oftentimes we're playing catch up to try to do some of the things that traditionally men would have done in their formative years to prevent these things from occurring in the first place. So it can't just be done energetically. There has to actually be a change to the way that people live. And I think that's equally, if not more important than the treatment itself. And I think a part of the issue, how to word this carefully, well, we're both males working in the acupuncture community, which instantly means probably there's a slightly feminine side to us, because I would say therapeutically, to be therapeutic or caring in this way, I would say is more of a feminine trait. So I would assume we're both more feminine males than maybe an extreme masculine male. But I think that often what happens is the advice that males are taking therapeutically is from women. And I think that's a mistake in many cases, because in the same way that I can't empathize fully with a woman, I don't know what childbirth feels like. I don't know what menstrual cramps feel like. I have no idea. And I don't know what it feels like to be a woman in this world and to be at risk walking down a dark alley. Or I don't know those concerns and those fears. I can intellectualize it, of course, but I can't feel it in the same way that a woman can. I don't believe a female therapist can know what a male goes through psychologically. They might know what they might be able to help them with regards to physical things, frozen shoulder, backache, whatever, stuff like that. But the actual psychology of the difficulties that men face, I think might be difficult for a female therapist sometimes psychologically. So an example I might have is I had a couple of males that I know that were working with, through private coaching, female therapists, both very skilled, very, very skilled female therapists. And I take my hat off to them for being highly competent at what they do. But they were going through months and months of talking with them in private consultations and still feeling those same frustrations. And in the end, I just sat down and had one lunch with them and managed to resolve a lot of their issues and get them to understand where a lot of the problems came from. And it certainly wasn't because I was a more competent practitioner than these two women. Definitely not. They got more experience than me. But I'm male. So I was able to understand or empathize to a certain degree the stresses and pressures that men face in this world and how to tackle it. So I do believe that the gender of the therapist is actually quite important when you're looking at psychological issues of these kind, as unpopular as that opinion may be.
Well, how could it be that unpopular? Because look, there's plenty of times where I will refer women to women acupuncturists or women therapists, and often we'll hear all kinds of people in various healing arts say, oh yeah, well, like, you're a woman, go talk to this woman. Don't talk to a man about that. And many women will say, look, I want a women therapist. Right? Maybe they've suffered abuse at the hands of men, or they're uncomfortable around men, whatever. And fair enough. So yes, I can see how that would be helpful. And again, Damo, and thank you, I appreciate this piece about how men and women are emotionally different creatures. I think that's important to not forget.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a whole spectrum of differences. Males need male role models. Like, the other thing I'm always surprised about is how many males don't have any male friends. And I find that very worrying, that males don't have male friends. They have male friends when they're younger, and then they get older, and then they don't have any, and then they don't have a camaraderie, and then they don't have a male role model. And you can see that that's what people are crying out for. This is why you get explosions on social media of people like Jordan Peterson, or even controversial characters like Andrew Tate or the Red Pill movement, which are obviously problematic. Well, people have different opinions on them, of course. But the young lost males, if you like, are not looking for female role models online. They're looking for strong male father figure type people online to help them understand what they're supposed to be. And I think often, because is it 30% or a quarter of families are single parent families now? So a lot of, you know, that's a lot of men probably, let's be honest, single parents is probably a mother that they're with, not a father in the vast majority of cases. So they're not growing up with a strong male role model, or perhaps some of the fathers that they have aren't strong in themselves anyway. So that's a huge percentage of males that aren't having a strong male role model to tell them how to develop and face these adversities in life and how to be a man. So then they're starting to look for those people online. And sometimes the message they're getting is not the healthiest and not the best. So I think it's natural for males to look for a strong or capable, or at least a male who's sorted in their life that can empathize with them and point them in those directions. And I think men are crying out for this. And I think, Chinese medicine aside, I think that should be a huge thing that we should be looking at in society, because otherwise this is, well, maybe it already has become a huge problem. I'm not sure, but it's certainly getting that way.
I think it's been a problem for a while.
Yeah, maybe. I've just had my head in the sand.
Well, look, we all have our head in wherever it is. Yeah. I look at media images. Often you'll see either, you know, like the tough guy assassin.
Yeah.
Right? That's one model. Or you see the buffoon dad. Like how many media depictions of a strong, capable father do you see?
Yeah, not anymore.
They often look like some kind of a clown. Homer Simpson.
Yeah. It makes you wonder, isn't it? It's like, is it because, I know that probably a lot of people will jump to the idea of that they're trying to demonize sort of strong males and this idea of toxic masculinity, but I'm not convinced on that idea. It's possibly true. But I also sometimes think it's kind of the current idea, current concept to make whatever problem you have be okay. Like, so for example, overweight, you have the kind of movement towards big is beautiful, body positivity. It's okay to be so morbidly obese, you could be dead in the next 5 years. Because you're so beautiful, you don't need to make any change. It's like, you don't want to upset people or make them feel unsafe, so you have to say this is okay and this is normal. And it feels like that what might have happened with males. So as they got to a stage where they felt more insecure in life and more frightened, instead of saying, okay, let's change it, instead let's change society so that it's acceptable to be that way. And then, of course, that becomes a fueling of the issue, and something that maybe was done if I were in one of my more positive days, I would say it was maybe done altruistically, but went wrong. rather than being a malicious thing that's happened. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And on other days when I'm more conspiratorial, I would have the opposite view, but, you know, day by day.
Look, I think there's a lot of good ideas and good intentions that didn't pan out. I see this in my clinic all the time. I've got an idea that a needle is going to be helpful for somebody, and I'll put it in, and I'll check a few markers that I like to check to see if the body likes it. And it's like, good idea, but wrong.
Sure, yes. Yeah.
So, and then there's, of course, the turning of yin into yang and yang into yin. So there's that. But coming back to the thing about role models and coming back to actually the thing about safety and that it's okay to be whatever dysfunction you actually are. Like we're supposedly not allowed to say, hey, dysfunction's dysfunction.
Sure.
Like you're a beautiful person and that extra 70 pounds, not going to be helpful for you in the long run.
But it's also hypocritical or maybe that's not the right word. It's kind of cognitively dissonant in a way, because as a Chinese medicine practitioner, somebody wouldn't come in with, I don't know, extreme liver overacting on the spleen or extreme damage to the lung channel. And you wouldn't go, they sit down on the bed, you go, no, it's okay to have that issue. I won't treat it. I won't change it. You're perfectly acceptable with your lung channel issues and your liver issues. So on your way, like it would seem to make you a very unprofessional practitioner and certainly unhelpful, you know, useless. So it seems strange to then adopt that attitude into the rest of life, if you get what I mean.
I do get what you mean, and that's a helpful distinction. Here's another piece I want to ask you about. Mm. And I think it fits in with this. It seems to me that young people in particular, look, I've got a daughter who's 19. She's in college now, mm-hmm. recently in high school. Like a ridiculous amount of her classmates have some kind of a psychological diagnosis. Many of them on medications. It's popular. It's popular. This is going to sound provocative, but what am I going to do? That's who I am.
That's right. I won't complain. Michael Max hurt my feelings. I'm never coming on this podcast again.
Yeah. You might need to man up on that. Anyway, it seems to me, and look, I'm not saying that we should ignore psychological issues that we have, right? Maybe some bravery and courage and like get that stuff sorted out. But it seems to me that very often these days, psychological diagnoses are like a talisman or a badge of honor. And people, it's like, well, I've got this diagnosis. I've got anxiety disorder. I got, you know, whatever the diagnosis of the day is. I hear new psychological diagnoses all the time in my clinic. Like, wow, I didn't even know that was a thing.
Sure.
But rather than recognize, okay, I've got this imbalance and it's leading to these psycho-emotive issues and it's affecting my life socially in these ways, people hold on to that. Well, I've got this thing and all y'all have to respect that.
Sure.
Now, again, this could be me and my generation. I'm a boomer. But I look at that and go, I don't think that's going to be helpful in the long run.
Sure, yes.
And I listened to you talk about the importance of strengthening the kidneys, especially in men. This is going to make me sound like an old fogey, but yeah, like sometimes you got to man up to something.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, it's only my opinion, of course, is that it's slightly different than the mechanism behind this psychologically in men and women, but staying with males, look, but if we look at something like the liver and the Hun and all of the associations with it, and as I was saying, I believe that the Zhe is very, very important in the essence of the kidneys in males. But then, of course, you have the driving energy of the liver, which is obviously very strong in males. You're more likely to get sort of rage outbursts. You would associate that more as a masculine trait, even if women would have it too, you know. And I think that...
Yeah, it makes us scary people.
Yeah, which brings you back to the importance of chivalry, of course. But the thing with the liver, what does the liver want to do? You know, like they talk about it sort of planning and things like that, but it also drives, it pushes forward. And essentially it's that energy that we would put behind things like conquering and the idea of striving and the idea of outdoing somebody else, right? Which we talk about in negative terms. But why? I mean, it's only negative if it's allowed to go that direction that it becomes destructive. Because I think what is natural for a male is to want to, on one level, to become better and strive and drive forward in life, okay? Which will come back around to these psychological diagnoses in a minute. But also, it's to outdo other people. Whether we admit it or not, it's to outdo other people, because that's a sort of very sort of animalistic kind of thing, and that's built into us. So what do males, what do we do when we call a male successful within society, and perhaps not an alternative type who's in Chinese medicine, but generally in society? You would say it's the guy that's what? Bigger, stronger, more handsome. So he's like Brad Pitt, so he gets more attractive mates. He can buy an expensive sports car that you can't have, and he's got four mansions. Like, those things that we do as success come from the driving and the striving of the liver, right? To cause us to push forward, you know what I mean? To grow and outdo other people. Competitiveness and comparisons and status are all here. That's natural for males. So if you have that quality built into you, what it means that as a society is every single person is want to outdo other people. So then you're going to want to be special. That's what you need, because if your directive energetically is to be different to other people, and then you have a society that's going to push that on you as well. I've been in America and seen the TV and seen the lie that's on kids' TV. Everybody can be president. It's like, no, you can't. Definitely not. Only one person is going to be president within, you know, within 4 years. Of course, you're not going to be president. And so if you have that idea of being special and you can't do it because something within you is not allowing you to strive and drive and become more competent and more effective as a male, you can do it the other way. So you're going to see something that makes you different because you have a sickness. So therefore, when somebody says to you, you have schizoaffective disorder, or you have a mood disorder, or you have ADHD, or whatever it is, people will cling on to it because all of a sudden now they have something that's different. So there it's almost, do you get what I mean? It's like it's feeding the energetics of the Hun and the Shen in the wrong way. And that's what creates the attachment to it. And I think that's why it becomes such a major thing. So if I believe, I always, before I say this, I try to argue with myself in my head because I'm aware these are not necessarily commonly held views. But I believe that if a male is able to direct that striving and growing and, dare I say, competing energy in a healthy and correct manner, they're less likely to succumb to these kind of psychological disorders anyway. And if somebody were to diagnose them with them, they're more likely to see it as an anchor on their growth anyway, and then try to either get out of that condition or disregard that diagnosis and carry on their way in a healthy manner. And I think that's the pattern that I see a lot in society. So my view would be, if you want to be special, don't do it through a diagnosis, do it through huge amounts of competency instead. And probably different for women, but from a male perspective, mm-hmm. I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're talking male perspective. Here's another piece. Look, we're social animals. We're social critters. We're, you know, what did humans domesticate first? Ourselves.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. Then the dog, but yeah.
And then the dog. As social creatures, status is important. We're not going to get away from it. So what I think I hear you saying is, what have you hooked your status mechanism onto? Have you hooked it onto something that helps you grow and expand? Or have you hooked it onto something that keeps you small and diminished and fearful and contracted? You can hook it onto whatever you want. It's going to take you in different directions. As humans, we're not getting away from status. That's not going to happen. Now, there's different groups and they have different things that they consider high status. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to get away from status. So, you know, I really appreciate this to think about, what are we putting that psycho-emotive energy into?
Yes.
And noticing where that takes us. And again, for men, I come back to this again and again in my life. I'll just make it personal. If I can't be useful, if I can't be helpful, if I can't somehow use what I got to be of service and of support and a benefit to those around me, I feel pretty dang awful about myself.
Yeah, all things which are based on your competence, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And competence doesn't come easily.
Mm-mm.
You know, there's a lot of getting it wrong on the way to getting it right and figuring things out.
Yeah, and based on striving, which is another important quality for males, once you stop striving, I believe you get depressed. Like, I don't see what the other option is. It's only the same as a high-level sports person who's striving and striving and striving, and then the career's over and they become a depressed alcoholic over and over again. We see it time and time again. And they still have the fame often. They still have the money, but there's something missing. They are not working. They are not striving. So, you know, like the other quality that I try to explain to the people I'm teaching is competitiveness is not a bad thing. And that's been demonized as well. Like, it's important to be highly competitive. And when I was a kid, which is not that long ago, I was born in 1980. So, you know, it is a while ago, I suppose now, you know, 43 years ago. But I remember as a kid, like, parents being proud of their competitive kids. You know, oh, my son is so competitive, my son is so driven. And now that's a dirty word. But I would say that the healthiest relationships I have with other males in my life, friends rather than family, is that we compete with one another. But it's balanced at the same time with also the ability to take pleasure in the other male's achievements. So I will do my absolute utmost to outdo that person at whatever we're doing. I want to be better at martial arts, better at medicine, better at Qigong. But at the same time, if he does better than me, that's amazing. I'm so happy for him. And that ability to be appreciative of other people's attainments, plus always seek to outdo them, is what pushes groups of males to get better and better and better. And if that isn't channeled liver energy, I don't know what is. And if that liver energy is not channeled, then you get depression. I mean, stagnation and depression.
Yeah, you get that stagnation.
Where do people put their achievements? How many levels have unlocked on an online video game now or something? I mean, that's where people are striving.
Mm-hmm. That piece about being able to appreciate those who are better than you, to lean on appreciation and respect instead of envy, right? Mm. Envy is, you know, that's one of the mortal sins. Oh, they, you know, they're better. What can I do to get, you know, take them down? Don't take them down. Learn from them. Here's another piece about being competitive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a small guy, so I couldn't do like football and basketball and stuff like that. But when I was a kid, I raced sailboats.
Yeah, cool.
Which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, sounds it.
And it put me in the company of, I was a teenager, and it put me in the company of men in their like 20s, 30s, 40s, even 50s. And the idea was to go out on the race course and do your best.
Mm.
Be fierce. And then, you know, have a beer afterwards. Here's the thing that I learned about competition from these guys. The people that were really good, they would see where you were weak or where you might learn something, and they would help you.
Yes.
So there's a very cooperative aspect, because the goal is not to always beat somebody. The goal is to keep getting better.
Yes. And men only learn that by having groups of males that have a similar mindset. So you have to have males that think the same way, and you work together. And we were always quite ruthless, actually. If we had a group of friends while we were growing up, and that was usually in martial arts. So it was, that was normally the field we were in. So it was within that kind of community. Mm. If there was a male within our group that just wanted to backstab or bitch or cut you down or something, we would just get rid of them. That was what they would learn through isolation. And it was almost quite animalistic in a way. We would just shun that person from the group until they learned that actually we have to work together a team, and then they would accept them back in. And that camaraderie and competitiveness that built within the team became a very important part of our development. And if I think back to those people, I still know them now. I don't think any of them suffer with depression. And I certainly don't. And it's not, maybe that's not the only sole cause, but I would say that we managed to channel our liver energy, but I'm certainly not fearful of my own liver energy and certainly not ashamed of it, but it's channeled in a very effective direction and balanced with what Buddha himself said was one of the most important qualities on the path, which is sympathetic joy for somebody else's achievements, appreciation for the excellence of others. But I think if you're weak in yourself, then that sympathetic joy is lost in envy, because instead of appreciating the strength of somebody else, instead it just shows you how inadequate you are yourself. And that's where the problem arises.
This is interesting, Damo. I feel like we've come full circle in a sense. You were talking earlier about how men are more rooted in their kidney, they're more rooted in their jur, women more rooted in the shen, but you just used the term sympathetic joy, right? So there's your kidney-heart connection. There's your Shaoyin connection. Mm-hmm. Being able to have that sympathetic joy, again, that's a potent, potent tonic for your water.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. I believe that these qualities, combined with a healthy level of admiration for somebody who has a high level of skill, will balance most things inside your body. It's the bitterness that is killing males on the inside, from what I can see, and the resentment. And I think that often comes from that lack of knowing how to be, unfortunately, you know. And I hope that doesn't sound cruel. That's certainly not my aim, and I would never want to come across as cruel, but just the sort of blunt truth of what I see.
Well, look, you're a Chinese medicine doctor. And as you pointed out, our job as practitioners is when someone comes before us, we discern as best we can how we might be helpful. Sometimes
Hopefully.
The news is not easy news. It's like, sure. I mean, it's like, look, if I take my car because it's going thunk, 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 I don't know why it's doing that. And I take it to the guy to, you know, who knows how to diagnose it. It's like, oh, your wheels are not balanced. We rebalance your wheels, and we're going to realign the front end too. And then your car will be like zzz, going down the highway instead of thunk, thunk, thunk. It's our job to see clearly and help compassionately. That's my suspicion.
Yeah. And then, you know, it also makes Chinese medicine, at least when you first encounter someone, quite simple in many ways. Like I think people overcomplicate it, because, for example, when I encounter a male student encounter, sounds like it's a rare thing, when I have a male patient and I'm working with them, then the first thing I will always check is the quality of the jing, of the essence. So I will be checking the strength of the kidneys, and I'll be checking the strength of that root energy in them straight away. And then also when I'm having a conversation with them, it's very easy to ascertain very quickly what kind of issues they struggle with in their life. Like my personal consultation process is normally a chat over a tea around the table that can sometimes take a couple of hours, and often they don't know they're being diagnosed. And then I'll say, oh, we'll start the treatment. And they think we've had, but that's my diagnosis. I'm learning what's going on in their life and seeing what's going on inside their sort of system. Whereas if I have a woman that comes in for treatment, the first thing I check is their blood. And I will work very simply with these things, because these are the core constituent factors pointed out by Chinese medicine that show us the sort of underlying strength of the patients, the constitutions. And often it gives me a window into what's going on for them psychologically. So those, you know, those archetypes, I mean, I can't say it's very often a male comes in and I instantly jump to blood, unless they look very blood deficient. I don't assume that that's going to be the issue. And unless a woman looks very depleted, I don't normally assume jing and kidneys right at the beginning. I'm sometimes proved wrong, of course, when I'm working with them. But those assumptions are there. And I think most Chinese medical practitioners have those assumptions or something of that type, which means they believe in nature and they believe in difference between the sexes, ultimately.
Well, Damo Mitchell, we should probably land this plane. We could probably go on for quite a while.
Sure.
But I think we're going to have to come back another day, because I actually have to get to clinic.
Oh, okay. Yep. There's a patient laying on your bed feeling very lonely right now.
Well, yeah. Not yet, but soon.
Okay. But it's nearly midnight here, so.
So thank you so much for this time. Thank you for your courage and your perspective on something that I think is a real issue in our society at this point, and to help us as practitioners use the tools and perspectives that we have with Chinese medicine. Such a treasure. It gives us such a unique and helpful way of connecting with people and helping them. And I really appreciate you taking the time today to share your perspective. It feels helpful.
It's really nice to chat with you. I actually really enjoy it. You're a very pleasant person to talk to. So thanks very much for having me come on here again. Thanks.
My pleasure. Until next time then.
Yeah, thank you very much.
There is a lot in this conversation that got me thinking. First, that men and women process emotions differently. I grew up with the idea that all people have emotions and we basically process them the same, except that men tend less to their feelings and probably should be more connected to their emotion. After this conversation, I'm seeing it differently, and I suspect this will help me in clinic, probably help me with my family life as well. The other part that rang thoroughly true for me was how it is vital that men need strife and difficulty to learn and to develop. It's catalytic to the process of changing from a boy into a man. And I suspect that much of the bad behavior we see in men is because they're not men, but actually boys in the body of what appears to be a man. They have not connected with their jur in a way that allows them the alchemical courage to take up agency in the world. And finally, the importance for men to feel useful. I don't think this is to be underestimated. Looking to be useful, having the feeling of being capable, of being connected because we make a difference with what we do, it is part of what gives men a sense of worth. And this is important because without it, we remain boys. I'm not sure this gets talked about much these days. Perhaps it's an old-fashioned idea, but as Damo brought up in the beginning of this conversation, how he has been caught by the question of what makes a man flourish. I suspect that feeling useful, that being able to strive so as to build ability and resilience, and being capable of bravery in the face of threats and danger, all of this nourishes our young in important developmental ways. It's worth considering, and even more of attending to. Lastly, Damo's thoughts on men and Jing is something that's worth paying attention to and cultivating. He's generously recorded a meditation on Jing cultivation that you'll find over on the show notes page. Visit the Geological website to experience that. Thanks as always for listening. If you liked this conversation, if you learned something new or found a moment of inspired insight, share the episode with your friends. If you want to support Geological, there's just one way to do that. It's by going to the website and becoming a member or leaving a one-time contribution today. Well, folks, that's it for today. Join us again next Tuesday for another conversation that connects up the voices of our community.